This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Recently, the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District unveiled Viva Health, a new campaign that will try to tackle diabetes and obesity in the city. The nutritious education campaign focuses on three important steps, including filling your plate with fruits and vegetables on every meal, use smaller plates for portion control, and this might be key here, this might be the most important one, replace sugary drinks, sodas, energy drinks, and some fruit juices with water. The tagline for Viva Health is "Eat well, feel great." So how are we going to make this health campaign different? Because let's be honest, we've been here before. Meanwhile, more people are being diagnosed in San Antonio with diabetes every year. But we just cannot give up. There's so much at stake here. But what can we be doing to make this work all the more better? What is a better alternative to reach people and change their eating habits to more healthy eating habits here in San Antonio, the city that celebrates breakfast tacos and barbacoa and Big Red all in one big chunk? So give us a call. We want to hear from you. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. We're joined this hour by Jennifer Harriet. She is the Assistant Director of Community Health for the City of San Antonio's Metropolitan Health District. Michael Guetta, he is the Chief Development Officer for the San Antonio Food Bank. And Chip Gallion, he is the Deputy Director of the Institute for Health Promotion Research, and Assistant Professor at the School of Medicine at UT Health San Antonio. Welcome, all of you. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, Jennifer, tell me about this plan, this campaign.
So I'm really excited to talk about Viva Health, but I also want to acknowledge up front that eating healthy, nutritious foods in San Antonio is not easy. So the challenge is that the choices you make depend on the choices you have. Putting healthy foods on the table is constrained by our personal circumstances. If I don't have a grocery store near my home, or I can't afford to buy fresh fruits and vegetables, then my current and most convenient option is often fast food or the corner convenience store. In a study that was recently conducted here in San Antonio at the Health Science Center, 70% of the participants stated that they run out of money for food each month. So though we are excited to unveil the Viva Health as an educational campaign, education and clear messaging is important, but it is only one part of the solution. As you mentioned, Viva Health is a new educational campaign that is really developed for San Antonio with the foods that we cook in San Antonio in mind, and is more, and the intent behind it was really to develop something that would appeal to our community.
Well, Kip, let me ask you, over at the UT Health Science Center, can you help explain the connection between what I eat and my health and diabetes and whether or not I'm going to maybe eventually be diagnosed with diabetes?
Excuse me. Well, there's certainly genetic predilection to diabetes, and we're aware of that, but the problem is exacerbated tremendously with poor diet and lack of exercise. Among Latino children, about 40% are overweight or obese.
So we're seeing juvenile diabetes.
Well, they're definitely juveniles, and they have the potential to, you know, there's type 1 and type 2.
Okay.
But they're definitely, there's a predilection for them there. And they, compared to whites, which is like about 28% are overweight and obese, and blacks about 35%. So diabetes is certainly an issue based on risk factors such as diet, lack of diet, poor exercise, and so forth. But we have a significant problem here in San Antonio, and we actually at the Health Science Center have a program called Salute America, which is focused on Latino childhood obesity. And that's one where we're doing a lot of work.
So that's like a blog that people can go on to?
It's more than a blog. It's a national program. And what we do is we try to promote through communications and tools that we create, opportunities for individuals across the country to become grassroots advocates in their community to address Latino childhood obesity. And we have, if one was to go to Salute America, that's one of our websites. You can just Google it and find it. You'll see a number of communications messages. We have what we call Salute Heroes that are individuals, kids across the country and Latino that have made changes in their own lives, and they're kind of role models. And so we elevate their stories and talk about how they made those changes.
Okay. Michael Guetta over at the San Antonio Food Bank, you feed a lot of people in San Antonio, a lot of people. Without you, people probably would have less to eat. But what do you think about as you provide food boxes and plates for the hungry in San Antonio in regards to healthy eating?
So a couple things. Jennifer started just by mentioning kind of the Viva Health activity. And I was there for the launch of that last week. And I have to just say one thing. Go check it out, number one. The image of the plate, right, for Viva Health, the kind of my plate of what you would put on your table. One, it's a salad plate size. So the regular dinner plate that we might be used to having, they're really encouraging us to eat from a salad plate size. Okay, so that's the number one thing. It's like, wow, from portion control. Then half of that plate is fruits and vegetables. Half of it. Not half of it's your protein, your, you know, whatever. But half is fruits and vegetables, and the other two quadrants are made up of kind of fruits and vegetables and maybe a grain, right? So pretty straightforward there, but a great image and a very powerful teaching tool that Viva Health has put in front of us. Yeah, at the food bank, we spend a lot of time thinking about the connection between the bottom line and the waistline, right? So, and there's definitely a connection. We see a low-income individual, I think Jennifer mentioned this, with a higher propensity toward nutrition-related illnesses. Not just diabetes, but hypertension and obesity, right? And we know we have a tremendous challenge with obesity nationwide in kind of San Antonio, Bexar County, two-thirds, right, of adults, let's say 45 to 65, kind of fall into that. So being overweight is definitely a challenge for a lot of our San Antonians of all socioeconomic strata, but particularly the poor. And it, same kind of thing. Yeah, people are choosing a food that's going to fill them up, might be cheap, but not necessarily healthy for them. So we've got a lot of strategies going on we can talk about during this hour to help a low-income household, whether it's in a temporary kind of acute need or a long-term kind of chronic need with healthy foods. So whether it's getting them out more fruits and vegetables, right? And we have lots of strategies for that, and we can discuss some of those mobile strategies, farmer market type strategies, and then programming. It's one thing, you know, we have to get them the food, and then often we're having to teach them how to cook with it, how to budget for it if they're buying it, and just how to kind of balance off the right kind of eating with the right dollars. So, you know, poverty and hunger. Hunger is a symptom of poverty, lots of issues related to poverty, but hunger's solution is the right food in the right amount at the right time. Okay, and so we're definitely trying to look at what are the strategies to get people the right food at the right amount at the right time, and it all comes back to some of the discussion today related to Viva Health and other pieces.
And the boils down to we have a population that is more susceptible to obesity, diabetes, and other diseases that are associated with obesity, like heart disease, hypertension, and the shortening of life expectancy, and even and the remaining years that they do have, maybe not quite so enjoyable. We're going to talk about that. We talk about, let's get real. Let's not sugarcoat the issue as we talk about diabetes in San Antonio. How can we really communicate to people here that some simple changes can make big differences in their diet and in their health? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and this is The Source. I'm David Martin Davies. This hour, we're talking about creative ways to help the community mitigate the obesity epidemic, deal with issues like diabetes, trying to help the community understand the choices that they make at the kitchen table will have lifelong impact with them, particularly if they're choosing things like sugary drinks and processed foods that could raise their risk factor for being diagnosed with diabetes down the line. And so let me turn to Jennifer Harriet. She is the Assistant Director for Community and Health for the City of San Antonio's Metropolitan Health District, and they've unveiled a new campaign called Viva Health to try to tackle diabetes and obesity in the city. And Jennifer, earlier you said San Antonio is not a place to make these choices, that it's not easy here. Why is that?
Well, I think we made some great strides in San Antonio over the last 10 years. If we were just talking before we started about the amazing Salado Creek and the greenways that we have, so people can exercise and walk and bike ride more safely. But the reality is that in many of our inner city communities, we have broken sidewalks, or we don't have sidewalks at all, or people don't feel safe walking in their community. So we need to continue to work on what we often in public health call the built environment. We need to make sure that everyone in our community has access to safe places to be active, as well as healthy places to get healthy food. And it's a challenge. Our parks, we're developing our parks. We've got some great places where people can be physically active. We have fitness in the park. So there are many opportunities. But as you mentioned right at the beginning of the show, if people are worried more about just making sure they have some food on the table, or worried about their job security or their immigration status or any of those issues, it is really difficult to put their health first. And so what happens is people put that second, third, fourth. And what the result of that is that people put themselves at risk for a higher chance of both being overweight, which is a risk factor for then diabetes and obesity.
We know that nationwide, the consumption of sugary drinks is on the decline, mm-hmm. that fewer people are drinking fewer sugary sodas and things. Mm-hmm. But that is not an across-the-board statistic. This is something that is impacting mainly the higher income and the well-educated. It is not really so somehow they have gotten the message. And they're able to act upon it to, I need to stop drinking these soda waters and start drinking more water or less sugared drinks, and they're fine with it. Mm-hmm. So obviously there's a way to do it. Mm-hmm. There are some parts of the population that have gotten the message and are making progress. Can we learn from them and then bring that to the rest of the population so that they can benefit from not drinking so much sugar?
Absolutely. I mean, there's some messages that we need to reiterate. For example, you know, many of us who can afford to, we spend lots of money on bottled water. Well, San Antonio water, tap water, is perfectly safe and perfectly healthy, and we should be drinking more of it. And that is something that's available to every single household in this community for free. The issue, too, is access. So if when I walk into a grocery store or a corner store and the first thing I see is a long aisle full of sugar-sweetened beverages or sodas, and the water is way in the back, or maybe I don't realize that that Gatorade that people have encouraged me to consume if I do a lot of exercise actually has a lot of sugar, and unless you're doing an hour or two out in the heat of San Antonio summer, you really don't need to be replacing it with a drink that has added sugar. So we need to get that message
out. Sure, but I'm wondering if the community realizes that when they do choose to get the sugary drink or choose to get this super sweetened saturated iced tea, that they are not making a healthy choice with that decision.
I don't think that everyone understands how much sugar is added to these drinks.
And what that sugar is doing to their body,
absolutely.
As far as making you insulin resistant. Mm-hmm. And so that's what insulin is supposed to be doing. Insulin is in your body to help drive sugar into your cells. Mm-hmm. But when you have so much sugar in your system all the time, you need more and more insulin to do that job. And then therefore you develop pre-diabetes and maybe eventually diabetes. And that's what people are trying to avoid.
Right. And the more sugar we consume, the more our bodies draw us to wanting to consume more. And David, you mentioned it at the beginning of the show to us. I mean, you're trying to reduce your consumption of sugar and noticing you're craving it. Well, if you eat sugar and high fat foods every day, your body gets really used to it. And it goes through some withdrawal if you try to stop. So there's all sorts of things playing here that make it more challenging.
Okay. And so you wanted to say something?
No, I just think the plus for the community is that there's a greater understanding now of food as medicine, right? I mean, I think, you know, food was just the basics. It was what we needed. But the concept of food as medicine, I think, is growing awareness across all socioeconomic strata and across this community. And that's a plus, right? So we knew for a long time the apple a day kept the doctor away, but now we're understanding what the real power behind that is. And so even the doctors, when we talk to a lot of doctors all across the community when we work at the food bank, you know, they're writing a prescription for somebody for hypertension or for a lot of things, but they're not necessarily writing a prescription for fruits and vegetables, mm-hmm. right? And so we've actually started some programs privately funded where the doc can, hey, say, here's a prescription, go to your local pharmacy, get that filled, and here's a prescription for fruits and vegetables. You're a low-income individual. You might have issues with access or dollars. The food bank will help you with that. And so, you know, our you look around the community, Walgreens, CVS have a vision of putting a pharmacy on every corner. Well, we don't have a farm stand on every corner in San Antonio like we might have used to in an earlier time. And so our attempt is to try and get that farm stand, the pharmacy with a FARM, pharmacy, back on all the corners across our community to provide access and to provide those fruits and vegetables and then to teach a wraparound nutrition education, because we know there's a little bit of education and behavior modification that has to come with access.
Okay, let me take some phone calls. We got Moses on the line. And Moses, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I appreciate the opportunity. I'm a practicing cardiologist, and I prescribe food and exercise to patients. But it's a very difficult thing. And most of the things is because they've learned to eat in the bad ways, because it's easy. Fast food is fast because it's very available. But when I see some of my patients, I ask them to stop eating fast food, stop eating sodas. The family brings them sodas to the hospital after they come out of the big surgery. And I see the whole family telling me, oh, no, it's not FIM, it's for the kids. And you have these obese kids learning all the bad things when they're seeing the problem. So we need to start very early, because as we teach kids to eat, we are telling them the message. So it's very important to emphasize, and I'm very happy that this is a community effort, because it really takes a whole village to re-engage the community. And we need to do more things and more sidewalks and opportunities for people to walk and exercise, because that's the other part of the equation. It's not only the eating, but the activity. But I salute your panelists for this effort, and we all have to work on this. Thank you.
All right, Moses, thank you for the call. Kip Gallion over at UT Health San Antonio, and you're the Deputy Director of the Institute for Health Promotion Research. People use food and sugary drinks and things, fast food, not just to satisfy their hunger, but also for self-soothing, you know, to make themselves food. Not only is it a medicine, but it's also a drug at times. So shouldn't we also be teaching people maybe other methods to self-soothe in more healthy ways?
Well, there's no question it's a part of the culture that food is almost curative in many ways. And that's a real challenge, because we're really trying to recreate culture in some ways, and to do it in a positive way. And I also want to focus on, it's not always the individual that we need to focus on here. Certainly, you know, there's volition selecting certain things, or parents that are, you know, giving their kids. But, you know, there is the environment. Jennifer brought it up previously. We're not reinforcing it from an environmental perspective, or even more a policy perspective, then we're not really not going to achieve the goal we want to do here. So one way is to, you know, one thing is simple in, say, in schools, hydration stations, kind of glorified water fountains. But that's one thing where, you know, make those more available, because when the healthy choice is like the first choice, you're much better off. So there's a good choice there. And we shouldn't just promote water consumption without recognizing the negative consequences of too much sugar consumption either. Mm-hmm. So you really have to keep both of those in mind. And it should be a very broad and, you know, balanced kind of message to the family.
Okay, another caller. Katie has called in. And hi, Katie. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to call in. And I agree that a healthful diet and exercise is wonderful for type 2 diabetes and type 1 diabetes, or anybody with a beating heart. However, I would ask that you would specify that you're talking about preventing type 2 diabetes by diet and exercise, and that type 1 diabetes can develop
sure.
during the most helpful diets. I have a 9-month-old who was diagnosed with type 1. And if you would also spread awareness about type 1 as far as the risk as far as the symptoms of excessive thirst, flu-like symptoms without fever, lethargy, mm-hmm. and anything y'all plan on doing to spread that awareness, I'd be interested in hearing.
Katie, thank you. Thank you for your call. I appreciate that. So Jennifer?
Katie, you're absolutely right. Thank you for calling, and I can only imagine how difficult it is to have a nine-month-old diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. That's true. Type 1 diabetes is genetic. It's not something that you can prevent. It's a much smaller portion of the people who have diabetes have type 1 diabetes. I believe it's 10% to 90% who are type 2 diabetics. Type 2 diabetes generally is preventable with good health and active living. I did want to agree with what Kip was saying, that it's important that we not just focus on encouraging people to drink more water. That has not shown in the evidence to have the impact that we desire in terms of having people just switch to water. We really need to help them understand how much sugar is in the sugary drinks that they consume. I saw on a bumper sticker not too long ago, sugar is the gateway drug. So, you know, it really is something that's very addictive and hard to give up. We did, in San Antonio, there is a campaign called Sugar Pack. You can find it at sugarpact.com. Kip and I worked on some of the initial parts of that campaign in 2015, but it provides you with information on how much sugar really is in each of these many sugary beverages.
So you tell people to drink water, and water's boring. Okay.
Yeah.
And so people are saying, hey, man, I need something a little bit more. I need. So what are some other alternatives? I don't know if this is smart or not, but, you know, I'm buying like high quality, you know, pomegranate juice or something mm-hmm. like that, and just putting a shot of yep. that into a glass of water, and it tastes just like regular juice, but I'm not getting all of the sugars.
Yeah, and the first time, the second time, and the third time you do that, you're probably going to notice that it doesn't have as much flavor as you would like. But once your body gets adjusted, when you feel that difference, then you'll start enjoying it. So you can do so many different things by adding, like you said, a shot of juice, fresh juice, hopefully, or natural juice with no added sugar. Add some mint, add basil, add cucumber. I mean, you can make lots of aguas frescas that have delicious flavors that have, you know, literally no calories, and they do taste good, and it's not like, oh, the same old boring water.
And Kip, is that something that y'all recommend with your education outreach?
Oh, absolutely. And you should also pay attention to like sports drinks mm-hmm. And really some of these fruit drinks, which really have a very high mm-hmm. level of sugar in them. And so, you know, to be careful about forgetting about the sugar content in them.
Right.
And I'd also say there's this issue about marketing that we can't forget either, because even with all this wonderful education we get, when the messages surrounding especially youth are all about consuming and consuming, in this case, high sugar content, it's very, very hard to achieve it. So we've got to focus on not just the individual, not just the environment, but what are the policies that have to change, and who's responsible for that?
Okay, we'll talk about that more when we come back from our two-minute break. Our phone lines are open if you want to join our conversation as we talk about how to get real about San Antonio's overall diet choices. How do we convince people to eat healthy? There's a new campaign in the city, Viva Health. We know that diabetes and obesity is a problem. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on your public radio station, KSTX, Texas Public Radio. More than a third of Bexar County adults can be considered obese, and obesity is a well-established risk factor for diabetes. 1 in 7 people in San Antonio either have type 1 or type 2 diabetes, and that's about 14% of the population. Nationwide, that's 9% of the population. Also, diabetes can cut about 8.5 years off the lifespan of an average 50-year-old. That's why this is an important topic, and the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District is launching a new campaign that targets this main cause of local diabetes, that is healthy, in trying to figure out how we can have more healthy eating. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about it this afternoon. You're invited into our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980, and we've got John on the line. And John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me on the air. I guess one issue I wanted to bring up was when people do decide to start to eat healthy, it's the issue of hidden sugars. Hidden sugars in such healthy products, considered healthy, as yogurt. Most yogurts have more sugar than a soft drink or a sports drink that was mentioned earlier. So, I mean, education that, you know, not all healthy foods are actually indeed healthy is a big issue that you know, San Antonio needs to be educated upon.
All right, John, that's a great observation. I appreciate that. So, Kip Gallian over at the School of Medicine at UT Health San Antonio.
Well, certainly that leads us to menu labeling, mm-hmm. Because how would one know what's in it unless it's listed on it? And so much of our work, we promote, recognizing that you can learn about it. There is a label there. Policies come in to make sure that it's properly labeled and in the right order and quantities. And I think from an personal educational, that's another thing we're trying to promote is get people to recognize that they can, you know, take control of their health by observing that.
So when you look on the ingredients of a product like yogurt, it doesn't going to say sugar. It's going to say fructose or something. It's going to be an oast of some type, right? And anyone who's really looking at the label, trying to figure out if there's sugar in there, they're probably on the right track already, and mm-hmm. they're figuring things out. But we've got to maybe get to the level of the general population so that when they just think that they're eating something healthy, they need to realize there's probably hidden sugar in here somewhere and take a second look. Get them to look at that label, Jennifer.
Yeah, I mean, anytime I pull something up, I do look at that label, and absolutely that thing of yogurt that sounds and you think is so healthy for you, if it's filled with sugar and maybe the fat's taken out and they've added a little bit more sugar to make it taste good, it's just way too much sugar. So look at those labels. They are on any item that you buy. And the other thing to look at is how many ingredients something has. I was at a community health improvement planning meeting this morning, and one of my colleagues mentioned Hot Pockets and the fact that there are 72 ingredients in Hot Pockets. There is no reason why something that is about the size of a deck of cards, if not just a little bit bigger, should have that many ingredients, which is tons of processed stuff that our bodies don't need. So we need to be looking at eating those whole foods, that apple, that head of lettuce, those things that you can cut and chop and pop into your mouth without sticking in a microwave or wrapping in plastic. So those are the things that are most healthy. And the truth is, when you are buying things at the grocery store, shop on the perimeter. That's where the healthier things are, not in the aisles. And then also do look at that sugar content. I think the Heart Association recommends is it 6 teaspoons of sugar per day. I think a regular sized soda has 12.
So the average American consumes 27 teaspoons of sugar a day. And so that's
6 is the rec, yeah.
Yeah. And so let me ask you, so Miguel Guerra, over at the San Antonio Food Bank, you have an opportunity because you have many, many points of contact with the population, people who are most vulnerable, people who are most at risk. So I know your main purpose is trying to deal with the hunger in San Antonio, but you also have an opportunity to deliver a message of these are choices that you can make to deal with hunger, but also deal with healthy eating.
And a couple of strategies. I just want to piggyback on what Jennifer was saying. You know, we're faced with often a low-income person, senior, young mom, a variety of course profiles. But many times they don't have a primary care physician, and so they don't know their numbers. And I guess that's where I was going to go. It's incredibly important for our populations to know their numbers from their doctor, to know where those sugars are, for instance, in their bodies, to know exactly what they're consuming and what the impact is. So, one, getting a visit with a primary care physician, incredibly important, and a message we're really trying to put out there because we want people to know that. Secondarily, we've turned our inventory of what we're giving out to the community to be more than 50% of what you put in your refrigerator or your freezer. So it's a perishable product. I think a lot of people think food bank, you're helping a low-income population with a canned good. That was long ago. Now it's what you'd put in your refrigerator or freezer because we know it's healthier.
And you've been able to update over at the food bank where you have more freezer capacity.
A tremendous amount. And that's all been a great gift from the community. But we had to augment it with those other kind of things. We know that when we have 16 now registered dietitians on the team that are out in the community, they're bilingual, and they're out teaching day in and day out. New moms, they're teaching seniors, they're teaching, again, all profiles of folks, how to eat healthier. I mean, just the basics here. Are you drinking water? Are you moving? Are you getting enough steps, right? All these great little things that tell us how much we're moving. But it's so it's a comprehensive picture that we're trying to get the community to engage in. And again, it just goes back to the power of the meal. And I just want to kind of say two pieces of that very quickly. One, we've been talking about the health part of the power of a meal. But gathering around the kitchen table for a meal, gathering around the dinner table has what social, emotional benefits as well. When you're grabbing that local food and you're cooking at home and you're gathering your family around that meal, there's a health benefit we know, but there's other benefits that benefit the community and the family as well that we also are trying to emphasize as well in the larger context of what it means to be a healthy community.
Okay, back to the phone lines with Gilbert. And Gilbert, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. One of the things that Jennifer stated earlier really resonated with me as an educator. One of the fundamental concepts that we talk about is Maslow's hierarchy of needs and how if a child isn't if the child isn't fed in the morning, they can't learn. They don't feel safe. They can't learn. And I really like how she mentioned taking a comprehensive view on San Antonioans' diet. And at what point does educating the population of San Antonio isn't enough, and we have to start reflecting upon like wages and the amount of time individuals have to go shopping and to prepare food? And are those some type of discussions we should also be having when thinking about people's health, like their wages and time budgets and access? Because at some point, I do feel that always just pushing forward with education, it's always good to have this information, but does it ever kind of lead to maybe shaming individuals and making individuals kind of feel bad for the decision that they really are forced to make if you're thinking about the single mother working over 40 hours a week and doesn't have enough time or funds to buy certain things? So at what point should we really expand the discussion to talk about people's maybe wages and the time that they have to budget for cooking and shopping?
All right, Gilbert, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. So Jennifer, what do you think?
That is a fabulous question. And
because people are stressed.
Absolutely. And yes, we came here today to talk in part about the Viva Health campaign, which is an educational campaign. But we cannot forget what we call the social determinants of health, which focus on education and poverty and transportation and housing. If we aren't improving the education and status of our community members, if they are insecure with what house or where they're going to sleep at night, if they can't even get themselves to a grocery store or a place to purchase those foods, if they can't afford those foods, then we're missing the boat on this. And so I spent this morning again with someone who spoke to us for 30 minutes on the social determinants of health. That may not be a term that's very familiar to our listeners. So what I want to invite you to do, honestly, is invite Dr. Bob Ferrer to come and speak on this program about social determinants of health so that we can start using that language and start talking about the importance of education.
So what would be some examples of social determinants of health?
Those that I mentioned. How educated is our community? What are their living wages? How many of them are living below the poverty level? Do they have access to health care? Those are the types of things that determine whether you can actually be healthy.
It's like what time you get off of work, mm-hmm. how much time do you have to get yeah. home, take care of your kids, start a meal, get the meal on the table. Maybe that's that time is zero.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I this is kind of funny, but I work very hard at the health department. I've got a 15-year-old at home, and she texted me earlier, and she said, "Mom, do you think you and I could have lunch sometime next week?" I'm thinking, ooh. Maybe we haven't even had dinner together in the last week or so. So we're busy, and we've got to make time for sitting around that table together, juntos, and consuming healthy foods and talking and being with one another.
And Kip Gallion with the Institute of Health Promotion Research over at the UT Health San Antonio, how are you trying to express that to the people who are looking for you for leadership?
Well, there's no question that these are social determinants. Getting at them, modifying them, are some of the most challenging of all our kind of change objectives here. I mean, and I think traditionally, the individual is the target of so much of this, when in fact, if there's not a supportive environment, it'll be very difficult to maintain. It'll certainly not become a social norm, if you will, to select water over, say, sugary beverage or you know, some kind of other unhealthy lifestyle. So in some ways now we're looking at policy. How can we, you know, how can we address some of these problems, such as, you know, the ACA? Insurance, mm-hmm. right there. That's a big policy issue.
Obamacare.
So, call it with that. Yes. Okay.
But so right now, Obamacare is in place, and so people still have access to a primary physician, getting that free checkup, being able to figure out, even if they are diabetic. A lot of people in San Antonio have diabetes, don't even know it, so they're not able to make the decisions that they need to make in order to try to manage that diabetes. We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. We'll continue our conversation as we look for ways that the City of San Antonio's Metropolitan Health District is trying to raise awareness of what you eat is having an impact on your health, on your lifespan, and what that means for you. The number to call in if you got a question, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about health choices in San Antonio with how we eat. We have an obesity epidemic, and that raises our risk for diabetes. We had an email from Rebecca. She writes us, "For many people suffering from obesity, the idea of giving up sugar-laced foods invokes a similar response to an alcoholic considering sobriety. With emotional relationship with food, it's their one outlet of comfort or of something stable. Combating that mindset is key in a fight against diabetes, but the solutions are simple. But not easy. I think it's important for anyone struggling out there to make healthy choices to know that there are resources available to help them through this lifestyle change, no matter what income level they are at." That's a great email that we got from Rebecca. And we're going to get to these phone calls in just a second, but I want to get Jennifer's quick response to Rebecca's email there. It sounds like that's a real informed email.
It is. And she's got a great point. And there are some really wonderful resources out there. The San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, in collaboration with the YMCA, has three programs. One is for people who are at risk for diabetes but aren't diabetic yet. It's called the YMCA's Diabetes Prevention Program. They also have the Y Living Program. And MetroHealth has a Diabetes Self-Management Program. So there are some resources out there.
Okay, a call from Joanne. And Joanne, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Joanna.
Hi.
Hi.
One of the things I'm concerned about is doctors need to take a different approach with their patients that have a history of diabetes in their family. A doctor told me I was borderline. To me, there's no such thing. If you have the indications and you have the history, you need to right then and there start living as if you have diabetes to arrest it before it becomes a problem. Now I have type 2 diabetes because I was misinformed by a previous doctor.
Joanna, great point. I appreciate you calling in with that and hope you're doing better with that. Again, Jennifer?
Yeah, unfortunately, when we conduct some of the surveys in the community, we realize, as you mentioned earlier, that lots of people are not aware that they are, one, even predisposed for diabetes, or that the foods that they are eating are going to result in them becoming diabetic. So education is very important. Knowing your numbers is incredibly important. Knowing your A1C, getting those preventive checkups.
Yeah, no, and I think just would add on there, Moises, our cardiologist who called in earlier, kind of was talking about his role in that, but getting our physicians more and more trained when it comes to nutrition is important. And I know many, many medical schools across the state of Texas and even the United States are looking at that. How do they integrate that component into the education, just exactly what that caller was talking about?
If I could add, here at the Health Science Center, we actually have offerings for medical students now and arrangements with the HEB and their culinary school, and it's actually part of the curriculum. So it's starting to happen, and where physicians, as part of their education, are focused on preparation and how to communicate that with their patients as well.
Okay, Bess has called in. And Bess, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a couple of points about what collaboration is going on nationwide, because it is a nationwide issue. America, comparatively to other countries, has seen more of an issue with obesity and the rising obesity epidemic. And so I'm just wondering what we're doing to sort of combine our efforts with other people, because, you know, if one state has done research into, oh, these are some methods that we've proven to be valid and good and produce good results, are we listening to that, and are we collaborating across state lines? And additionally, I'm wondering about the longevity of the program that we're launching here, in the sense that there are a lot of fad diets. There's paleo, there's keto, there's, you know, even the purple diet. And I'm just curious about if we are making an effort to make these programs long-term and make these efforts that are saying, oh, never have sugar, but why don't we reduce it, or why don't you have it one day a week? And what efforts are being made in terms of making these health plans long-term rather than a short-term solution to lose weight?
Okay, Bess, thank you for that. Jennifer, she brought up a couple of really good points there. First one about San Antonio working with other maybe national organizations or looking across the country at best practices, but it also seems like San Antonio is at the tip of the sword in trying to figure out this riddle, because we're right where other cities are going to be soon.
Mm-hmm. And some cities and other countries are actually doing some really innovative work around this. Mexico, 3-4 years ago now, put in place a tax on sugar, sweetened beverages, specifically soda, I think.
Right. And in Santa Fe, New Mexico, they're going to have a vote on in May whether or not to put in a sugar tax.
Right. Berkeley, California, Philadelphia. So there have been several communities that are doing that and earmarking that money to specifically go towards prevention. But I did want to make one comment about what the caller said. Viva Health is not a diet. Viva Health is a way of living and a way of life. It's recommending basic things like filling your plate with fruits and vegetables, half your plate, and having a serving of lean protein as well as some grains, healthy grains. So it really isn't a fad or anything like that. It's just a little bit of repackaging to make it more attractive to and more appealing to our San Antonio community.
And Kip, maybe you can address the fact when people get on these fad diets, and maybe they'll see a limited success for a short while, and then they fall off the diet, and they feel like, well, I just can't do it, and they give up, and they don't really realize that maybe a different approach will find long-term success.
Well, it's with anything else, if you want to maintain, it's got to become a part of your lifestyle. And I would also say that you know, it's not just the diet itself, but you've got to have that exercise. You've got to maybe modify your environment a little bit to encourage you to walk more. You know, start riding a bike. And so it's a very much a holistic approach is what we're starting to, we've known that for a long time, but I think we're starting to chip away at those things that are much more difficult, but which are going to make, change much more permanent.
Okay, and Martin has called in. Martin, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Happy to listen to your show every single day.
Thank you.
Love it. A quick point. The thing that I've noticed, I've raised four children. I have two still in the school system, is my observation is that the school system really doesn't teach the children healthy eating habits. And by that, I mean it's a time constraint on lunch. From bell to bell, they get 30 minutes in the elementary and in the middle school and in the high schools. They get 30 minutes from bell to bell to go to their locker, put up whatever they can put up, rush to the cafeteria, stand in line, and then they have to be back in class, very shortly after. So on an average, I guess my daughter and my son get maybe 10 minutes, to actually eat, and cramming that food in, and not really enjoying it, and then just maybe eating more than they can, or not eating enough in some cases where they just decide it's too much of a hassle and they don't even bother to eat their lunch. I think it's just sending a lot of really bad habits. And I know that at the house, they just, even though they have, we try and eat healthy and have a nice sit-down dinner, the constant thing is just they just can't stop cramming the food in, and they wind up usually eating more than what they should because their brain doesn't even register the fact that
right.
They've eaten enough.
Martin, thank you for the call. Michael Guetta over at the San Antonio Food Bank, you know what's happening with these kids and eating.
Well, yeah, and I think, Martin, one of the things that we're seeing that's a positive trend in education, and I spend a fair amount of years there myself, is that schools are really looking at that issue that you pointed to of not having enough time for play and physical activity. And the more that they're actually increasing play and physical activity, they're seeing benefits in the classroom and in test scores. And so that's one of the trends that they're very much looking at. How do we build in more time for play and more time for physical activity? Additionally, kind of my plate activity that has happened out of kind of the federal government and the USDA of really helping the National School Lunch School Breakfast Program put together a healthy plate for the cafeterias. That's been a big plus. And I think what we're seeing is that a younger generation now is much better educated when it comes to healthy eating. Vending machines are generally out of schools. And so we're seeing positive trends with younger children. But if they go home and bad habits are at home, then that's what's going to be probably the longer lasting activity. So we're really having to target the home no matter the income level as well.
Jennifer Harriet, over at the City of San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, how do we know that this latest Get Healthy Eating campaign is going to be another one of these one and done type of things? We hear about it, and the next year we'll hear about a new campaign. I mean, how do we make this one stick?
Well, again, I think that this isn't something new. It is slightly repackaged to really be more appealing to our San Antonio community. It's really similar. It is taken from the My Plate, which has been around for many years is encouraging these basic messages of drink more water, half your plate with fruits and veggies, and then portion control. We do hope to continue to fund and support this. We are looking for partners out in the community. We are so happy to say that the CHEF program out of the San Antonio Children's Hospital has come on board with us. They're going to be developing a new recipe book. They, too, as Kip mentioned, are looking at food as health and teaching their doctors and their patients about the importance of healthy eating. We're looking to talk to HEB. The food bank is on board with us. We're really looking to have partners from all over the community to work with us on this effort.
Kip Gallion at the Institute of Health Promotion Research at the School of Medicine, UT Health San Antonio. What is the single one low-hanging fruit thing that people can do here to try and improve their eating habits?
Well, I guess I'm just going to mention, if you can back off on sugar, absolutely empty calories, liquid, you can achieve a great deal.
And Michael Guetta over at the San Antonio Food Bank, where do we catch up with the Mobile Mercado Pharmacy on Wheels?
Mobile Mercado, you can find it at safoodbank.org to see our schedule. So that would be number one. And the Mobile Mercado is another strategy for the food bank. We have had kind of farmers markets on wheels that go out to a low-income neighborhood, often where there is a food desert, and provide that food for free. The Mobile Mercado, we know that for many of our people who've received food for free for a while, they now have some income. So the Mercado allows them a farmer's market where they have some of their skin in the game, some of their cash, but they're getting locally grown fresh produce right there off the Mobile Mercado as well. So it's at safoodbank.org.
All right. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.